Daddy, that's a funny Christmas tree. It's so skinny.
And there are hardly any ornaments on it.
Well, that's a picture of the very first Christmas tree that Mommy and Daddy ever had after we were married. You remember that one, honey?
I sure do. We couldn't afford to buy any ornaments that year.
Things have improved, haven't they?
Yes, they have.
I guess you have every Christmas you ever spent together in this photo album, don't you?
Yes, and it's fun to look back on them.
Wouldn't it be great if we could do that with our Christmas show?
You know, we could do that. As a matter of fact, that's just what we'll do. Darcy, all the tapes are on that shelf over there. Go get them, please.
Over here?
That's it.
Oh, Daddy, this is going to be great.
Christmas Eve, 1973, and it's good to be with you again. Tonight marks our 12th Christmas with you on the air, and it's become something we all look forward to at our house. Christmas is not quite as colorful this year as in years past. There are no outside lights except for the twinkle of someone's tree through a frosted window, but then I don't suppose there were any lights when our grandmothers and grandfathers celebrated the season either, and I seriously doubt that the season was any less joyful. So let's make this an especially merry Christmas tonight.
That's a wonderful idea.
And let's say hello to everyone. Merry Christmas, Darcy.
Merry Christmas, Dad. Happy holiday, Dad.
Thank you, Jimmy, and the same to you.
I bet you don't know who's coming to our house this year.
Now, let me see, Susan. Is it the Great Pumpkin?
No, it's not the Great Pumpkin.
I don't suppose it's the Easter Rabbit.
No, it's not the Easter Rabbit.
Well, I give up.
Hi, Di.
Who said that?
Dougie.
Hi, Dougie. Who's coming to our house tonight?
Santa Claus.
That's right, Santa Claus. And what do you want Santa to bring you this year?
Truck.
Oh, a truck.
Yeah.
What else?
Choo-choo.
A choo-choo, huh? Well, that sounds like a pretty good list so far. I want to remind you that again this year, the first half of our program is brought to you with the good wishes of all of our friends at the Charter Oak Bank and Trust Company. Well, Dougie, if Santa Claus is coming, I want to hear all about it.
Okay, Dave.
You better watch out. You better not cry. Better let out, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
He's making a list and checking it twice. Gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming.
Coming to town. All the kids in girl and boy land.
It was in 1962 that we first started this program, 11 years ago tonight. And in just a moment, we'll go back over some of those years. But first, this message from Mr. William E. Buds, president of the Charter Oak Bank and Trust Company.
Because of the energy crisis, this year we begin to realize that the real brightness and warmth of Christmas must come from within ourselves. After all, it is people and the love they share for each other that keeps the Christmas spirit alive through the years. It is that very special holiday when the world once again attempts to renew its quest for peace and harmony among men. May Christmas 1973 be an inspiration to all of us to give in the best interests of our fellow men, so that we may all share the blessings our country has to offer. On behalf of the entire staff at Charter Oak Bank and Trust Company, may I wish you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you, Mr. Buds. 1962. Darcy, you and Jimmy weren't even on that first show. You were both too little. But we had two very special guests. The first was the famous painter Norman Rockwell. I visited his studio in Stockbridge, Massachusetts.
Norman Rockwell did a lot of Christmas cards, didn't he?
Yes, and so many covers for a magazine called the Saturday Evening Post.
He also painted a lot of pictures of Santa Claus.
Santa Claus?
Yes, and I asked him, if I remember correctly, Susan, if he liked to paint Santa, because he does him so well.
I love Santa Claus. Nobody can beat me at loving Santa Claus. I think he's a wonderful guy. I did get fed up with doing them because you can't, there's just so many things you can have Santa Claus doing. You know, I had him the day before Christmas getting ready, and his little gnomes are helping him. Then I'd have he was up in the sky with his reindeer, and I had a lot of fun doing those, and coming down the chimney and filling the stockings and going up the chimney. And I even did him tired on the 26th. He's exhausted. See that one there? He's completely pooped because he's had a rough day with his reindeer. But I kind of ran out of Santa Claus. I mean, I began repeating myself, you know. It didn't seem to make much difference. They sold just as well whether I repeated myself or not. But I got a little tired of that. And then they wanted me to do the sort of... Well, they're not smart aleck exactly, but the more modern one. See, here's one of Pop. He's kind of stout, and he's trimming the Christmas tree. And he's up on the top of a ladder, and his wife is hanging on to the back of his belt, trying to balance him while he's putting the top on the Christmas tree.
That's a familiar scene.
Yeah. And, well, they, you see, that's what I said before. I think in Christmas you must always do the familiar. Never try to... Now, on Saturday Evening Post covers and lots of my other work, I try to do something that's quite new. The idea has never been touched on before. But I think in Christmas, people don't care about anything new. What they want to do is get that fine, old, mellow feeling of Christmas, goodwill, the golden rule, do unto others, and all that. That's what they want to feel. And they don't care about smart alecky.
Jolly old St. Nicholas, mean your ear this way. Don't you tell a single soul what I'm gonna say. Christmas Eve is coming soon, now you dear old man. Whisper what you bring to me, tell me if you can. When the clock is striking 12 and I'm sound asleep, down the chimney broad and black, with your pack of three, all the stockings you will find hanging in a row. Mine will be the shortest one, you'll be sure to know.
Johnny wants a pair of skates, Susie wants a sled.
What he likes. Mr. Rocker about Christmas when he was a little boy?
Well, I sure did, Susie. I asked him what Christmas memories he had.
Well, you see, I'm a kind of a contradiction in a way. I was born on 103rd Street and Amsterdam Avenue in New York City, and then I moved up to 152nd Street and St. Nicholas Avenue. But and our Christmas was rather limited. We lived in what they call a flat, you know. Anyway, I wasn't born and brought up on a farm. Because, as I said before, Macy's has done an awful lot for Christmas. They have a big parade and everything like that, and the merchants do a great deal for Christmas. But I don't think you'd feel that you had the Christmas you would have had out in the country,
no.
You know, with the sleigh bells and all that sort of stuff. And so that's the way I was brought up. But all my life, I've painted much more my backgrounds have almost always been country things. I mean, they're where people are simpler and so on, and where there's more atmosphere. I do city scenes, but I think I do more. When I lived in Vermont for 18 years, I love the Christmases up in Vermont. I love them here in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. But they're not quite as good as they were in Vermont, because I was right in among the farmers, and the sense of Christmas, and they get out their sleighs, and we'd go around and see everybody, and it wasn't a cocktail party thing so much as it was a kind of an old home week, you know, and the families, all the old people were made a great deal of, and the sons came back from the cities, and that sort of thing. And that's what I think Christmas means to most people, or what people would like to feel it means anyway.
Jingle, 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 jingle,
jingle. It was great hearing Norman Rockwell tell about Christmas, Dad. But you said you had two guests on the program in 1962.
Who's the other one?
Well, do you know a song called Sleigh Ride?
I do, Dad, and I think I figured out the other guest, composer Leroy Anderson, right?
Right. That same year, I traveled to Woodbury. I remember it was a cold December day, and there was a blazing fire in the fireplace when I got there.
Is that the type of weather that inspired him to write Sleigh Ride?
Well, I asked him just that. I asked him when it was composed, and was it written with Christmas in mind?
Sleigh Ride was one of the first things I wrote when I got out of the Army and moved up here to Woodbury, Connecticut. Actually, I first came here in 1946. You may remember there was a housing shortage then. And my mother-in-law was living up here at a cottage that was vacant. So since we had no other place to go, we packed our 14-month-old daughter plus the upright piano and came on up here to Woodbury. And during that first summer that we were here, I started Fiddle Faddle. I didn't finish it up until the following winter. And Sleigh Ride and Serenata. And Sleigh Ride, I remember, was just an idea. because of the, it was just a pictorial thing. It wasn't necessarily a Christmas music. And it was written during a heat wave. As a matter of fact, the strange thing is that it seems that all the winter or Christmassy things that I've done have been in heat waves. It was true of the Christmas festival, because you see, in this case, it was done for a recording. And Christmas music is recorded at the latest in July, because the records must be all processed and everything must be done, and you have to ship to the distributors by October 1st. A lot of people don't realize this. They seem to think along comes November and they say, well, I have a little piece of Christmas thing. I think it'd be good if they, a good idea if they put it out this year, and it's too late already. So Sleigh Ride was not written particularly for the following Christmas. It was just one of the, another piece of music that I wrote. At the same time, I did Fiddle Faddle and Serenata. I remember working on Serenata that same summer. The point of a number like Sleigh Ride, that you can call a descriptive piece or pictorial, is that you have to start with the idea of the rhythm and whatever it is first. In this case, it's the rhythm of the sleigh bells. And these sleigh bells go chink, 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 like this. That's the regular rhythm of sleigh bells. So having done that, it's necessary to build the music around that rhythm. And of course, sleigh bells are repetitious. They this bump, 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 bump. And having done that, it was very natural then to write a melody that was not only in the same rhythm, but had the same repeated notes, like so. And in the middle section, it goes, there are repeated notes again, you see. And of course, the entire rhythm of the thing must be in that, you have to get chink, 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 chink. That must keep up all the way through.
And has certainly captured the feeling of the sleigh ride in the music, hasn't he?
Yes.
Did Leroy Anderson also write the words, Dad?
No, Mitchell Parrish wrote the lyrics about 5 years later, Darcy. I asked him if he worked with him on it.
Oh, yes, I always work with Mitchell Parrish. He has written lyrics to 6 or 7 of the things that I've done. And when there were so many demands for, say, choral editions and things like that of sleigh ride after it had become popular, then we decided to get together and write a lyric to it. Mitchell Parrish is unusually good at this because he has the ability, he's written many lyrics to instrumental numbers. And this is quite a knack because, you see, when you write a song, the lyric writer has free rein. He's usually the one who contributes the title and other things. But here, he was stuck with the title. He had the title already. And it was not only the subject, but he had to get the word sleigh ride in somewhere. He has to fit that word in, then he has to build the lyrics around it. And this takes a very skilled writer, a very skilled lyricist. He has to know lyric poetry, and because he is a student of lyric poetry, he can quote Keats and Shelley, he knows them all. I asked him once if he didn't have a rhyming dictionary, and he said, oh no, he said, I know all the rhymes. Yeah. This is rather interesting, you see, it's all a part of his technique and part of his background. At the same time when we were working, I would suggest a couplet or something with a certain rhyme. Well, he said, I don't want to do that because so-and-so in his song, he used that rhyme and that particular thing. He knows all these other lyrics, so he tries to avoid what other people have done and get something that is new. So that is how the lyric, The Sleigh Ride, came to be written.
Just hear those sleigh bells jingling, ring, ting, tingling too. Let's go.
Now, once again, here is Mr. William E. Buds, president of the Charter Oak Bank and Trust Company.
The Christ, whose birthday we celebrate tomorrow, gave us this gift for all time, his message of peace on earth, goodwill to men. We have heard these words many times before, but perhaps this year we can attempt to rededicate our lives toward that goal. In this time of domestic crises, let us do our best to conserve and share the blessings which have become so important to this country. It is only in giving that we receive, and on behalf of the entire staff at Charter Oak Bank and Trust Company, I offer warmest greetings to you and yours and high hopes for a peaceful and prosperous new year.
Thank you, Mr. Buds, and we're delighted to be able to share this Christmas once more with all of our friends at the Charter Oak Bank and Trust Company, 90 Pearl Street, 2039 Broad Street, and 400 New Park Avenue in Hartford, and at 55 South Main Street in West Hartford.
Daddy, did you ask Mr. Anderson about Christmas when he was a little boy?
Well, I asked him if he had any personal memories of Christmas.
Well, of course, you're talking about a personal thing here, and everyone has his own personal memories. As far as my personal memories go, I think they're probably, in general, same as anyone else. You think of when you were a boy. These the thing, especially as you get older, you think. And they also seem to revolve around food, because, you see, we were, my parents were born in Sweden, and so at Christmas time, we would have the traditional Swedish foods on Christmas Eve. As a matter of fact, in Sweden, they give out gifts on Christmas Eve and not on Christmas morning. So for a good many years, we had our Santa Claus, you might say, on Christmas Eve. And then, of course, for dinner, we would have the hogshead cheese and the pickled herring and the pickled beets and various kinds of sausage and other things that you usually find in the smorgasbord. Then, of course, the rice pudding for dessert. And in the rice pudding, they always put an almond. And whoever gets the almond, you see, is supposed to have good luck during the next year. Of course, it always happens that the youngest child happens to get the almond, if they sort of arrange it that way. Then, an early Christmas morning, about 5 o'clock, everyone gets up and goes to church. It's called Julotta, the early morning Christmas service. And, well, those are the things that I remember.
This first portion of our program has been brought to you with the good wishes of the Charter Oak Bank and Trust Company. Well, it's 8:30, and let's remind our listeners that this is WTIC Hartford. And the next portion of our program is brought to you again this year by the Hartford Insurance Group.
Are we going to hear any more of the people we had on the show in the past?
We sure are, Jimmy, but let's have some music first.
Long time ago in Bethlehem, so the Holy Bible say, Mary's boy child, Jesus Christ, was born on Christmas Day. Hark now, hear the angels sing, a new king born today. And man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day. Trumpets sound and angels sing, listen what they say, that man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day. While shepherds watch their flock by night, them see a bright new shining star. Them hear a choir sing, the music seem to come from afar. Now Joseph and his wife Mary come to Bethlehem that night. Then find no place to born she child, not a single room was in sight. Hark now, hear the angels sing, a new king born today. And man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day. Trumpets sound and angels sing, listen what they say, that man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day. By and by they find a little nook in a stable all forlorn, and in a manger cold and dark Mary's little boy was born. Long time ago in Bethlehem, so the Holy Bible say, Mary's boy child, Jesus Christ, was born on Christmas Day. Hark now, hear the angels sing, a new king born today. And man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day. Trumpets sound and angels sing, listen what they say, that man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day.
What year do we go back to next, Dad?
Well, that's a hard one to answer in a way, Darcy. You see, I visited with our next guest in 1963, but her story of Christmas goes all the way back to 1897.
1897? Who is she?
Her name was Virginia O'Hanlon Douglas. She's no longer living, Jim, and she was a very old lady when I visited her home 10 years ago in North Chatham, New York, and that's not far from Albany.
Why is she so special, Daddy?
Well, let's go back to the beginning, Susie. Mrs. Douglas was born Laura Virginia O'Hanlon on July 20th, 1889, in the city of New York. When she was 8 years old, she decided to write a letter to the New York Sun, that was a big newspaper in New York, to ask if there really was a Santa Claus.
What made her do that?
Well, I have a confession to make. There were two really great times in my life. One was my birthday, which was in July, and the next was Christmas. And I just lived from my birthday to Christmas. My birthday being over, I was talking about what Santa Claus was going to bring me. And one of my little friends told me there was no Santa Claus. Well, that was something I could hardly believe. In fact, I didn't believe it, but I wanted to be sure, you know, I wanted to be right. So when my father came home, he was really an authority on everything. I asked him if there were a Santa Claus. Now, he was a little nonplussed. He wasn't as sure. He wasn't as definite as he usually was about things. So I conceived the idea that I'd ask the Sun. Now, that seems strange, but in our house, the Sun was an authority. It was a very, very, very fine newspaper. But my father's telling my mother, when she would question him as to whether or not something was so that she had read, he'd say, "Where'd you read it?" And when she said, "In the Sun," he'd say, "Well, if you see it in the Sun, it's so." So, of course, that was very, very wonderful proof that the Sun was reliable in everything. Then, in addition to that, the family who spent the summers together would talk about pronunciation of words or problems in whist, and that very often they would write to the Sun for confirmation as to what was the proper pronunciation or what was the best play of a whist hand. So I thought, well, if they knew things like that, they'd certainly know about Santa Claus. So I wrote the letter, and I expected there would be, yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. No, Virginia, there's no Santa Claus. That was all I expected. And then, to my great delight and everybody's great delight, Mr. Church answered it in the beautiful way that is immortal.
Virginia, your little friends are wrong. They have been affected by the skepticism of a skeptical age. They do not believe except what they see. They think that nothing can be which is not comprehensible by their little minds. All minds, Virginia, whether they be men's or children's, are little. In this great universe of ours, man is a mere insect, an ant in his intellect, as compared with the boundless world about him, as measured by the intelligence capable of grasping the whole of truth and knowledge. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist. And you know that they abound and give to your life its highest beauty and joy. No Santa Claus? Alas, how dreary. It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. There would be no childlike faith then, no poetry, no romance to make tolerable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in sense and sight. The eternal light with which childhood fills the world would be extinguished. Not believe in Santa Claus? You might as well not believe in fairies. You might get your papa to hire men to watch in all the chimneys on Christmas Eve to catch Santa Claus. But even if they did not see Santa Claus coming down, what would that prove? Nobody sees Santa Claus, but that is no sign that there is no Santa Claus. The most real things in the world are those that neither children nor men can see. Did you ever see fairies dancing on the lawn? Of course not. But that's no proof that they are not there. Nobody can conceive or imagine all the wonders there are unseen and unseeable in the world. You tear apart the baby's rattle and see what makes the noise inside. but there is a veil covering the unseen world which not the strongest man, nor even the united strength of all the strongest men that ever lived, could tear apart. Only faith, fancy, poetry, love, romance can push aside that curtain and view and picture the supernal beauty and glory beyond. Is it all real? Ah, Virginia, in all this world, there is nothing else real and abiding. No Santa Claus? Thank God he lives. And he lives forever. 1,000 years from now, Virginia, nay, 10 times 10,000 years from now, he will continue to make glad the heart of childhood. Yes, Susie?
Daddy, do you ask her what she remembered about Christmas when she was a little girl?
As a matter of fact, Susie, I did.
Well, I remember that I might be the prototype of a great many children of my age. We had to go to bed very early so that we'd surely be asleep when Santa Claus came. I remember that I used to try to stay awake because really I did expect to hear the reindeer's hoofs on the roof, but I never did. I'd hung my stocking up, and my stocking was always hung in my bedroom so that it would be the first thing that I saw. The Christmas tree would be downstairs in the parlor. So I'd get my stocking and I'd dash into my mother's and father's room and display all the wonderful things that were in the stocking. And then they would get up, we would go downstairs, and I'd see what Santa Claus had left under the tree. And it was a very, very exciting day. Relatives and friends would come in to visit us, and we always had a real family time at Christmas time. Of course, they had to look at all the things that Santa left me and be as astonished as I was. Of course, going to church was always a very important part of Christmas because we didn't do as we do now in my family, go to midnight mass, but we always went in the middle of the day. And then Christmas dinner. Oh, Christmas dinner, that was wonderful. And there were candles on the tree when I was a little girl. And the ritual of lighting the candles and then being very careful that nothing happened, watching them, it was lovely. I can see them when I close my eyes. They'd be red and green and white ones, and then they had these little things underneath them, you know, so that the grease wouldn't drop down. Oh, and I forgot, we could light them for quite a long time afterward. The terrible moment came when the tree was too dry and it was too much of a risk to have your tree lighted at Christmas.
Many years ago in a manger cold and bare,
Daddy, when she became a big grown-up, did she still believe in Santa Claus?
You know, Susie, I asked her that, too.
Yes, Dick, I do. I think more than ever. I see so many expressions of the goodwill and the faith and the love and the generosity all through the years that my conviction is greater than ever. And as Mr. Church said, I hope that 10,000 years from now, he will continue to make glad the heart of childhood.
The holly and the ivy, when they are both full grown, of all the trees that are in the wood, the holly bears the crown. The rising of the sun and the playing of the merry organ, sweet singing in the choir. The holly bears a blossom as white as lily. Thank you.
All the people of the Hartford Insurance Group are happy to share the beautiful sounds of Christmas past and present with you and your family for this half hour of Christmas in Connecticut. Because of the gasoline shortage, we are all driving more slowly and driving less. But let's not drive less carefully. Whether you drive to a family reunion, to visit with friends, or to holiday parties, the people at the Hartford Insurance Group hope you'll join them in being particularly careful and considerate behind the wheel during this special time of year. Someone's Merry Christmas and Happy New Year depends on your safe driving. This is Dick Bertel, joining with all the people of the Hartford Insurance Group in wishing each of you a very happy holiday season and a new year filled with a spirit of peace and brotherhood.
Last guest tonight, Dad.
One of the greatest singers the world has ever known, Darcy. The year was 1967 when I visited with Miss Marian Anderson.
Daddy, what Christmas had she remember when she was a little girl?
I had a hunch that someday you'd want to know, Susie, so I asked her.
The Christmas that I think of particularly was a sad one. But I can tell you of a very lovely Christmas. It had nothing to do with my being a youngster. It was some years ago in Sweden, and we went to a place called Dalarna. It was a suburb probably of Stockholm, and the beautiful lake there was frozen quite hard, and there were holes at different places made in the ice where men would come and put down their rods and fish. During the afternoon of that day when I first saw that, the manager and his wife, who had taken me there for the vacation, Christmas vacation, said there's going to be a sleigh ride tomorrow. It was going to be Christmas Eve. And five other hotels around were sending out their people also for sleigh ride. And without any exaggeration, when the sleighs came together, there must have been at least 20 of them. So we all four sat in the sleigh, all four, meaning four people in each sleigh, two facing each other. And we went through the woods, perfectly gorgeous, and a lot of snow on the ground. And halfway the trip, we reached an old, old house in which there was a fireplace large enough to be stood in. And there was a roaring, roaring fire in it. And the people took their boots off, the women most particularly, and toasted their toes. And they were given a hot drink of red wine that was spiced with cloves and all sorts of things. And then you stayed there for a while and you got back in your sleigh and started off to the hotel. And on the way, as it got dark, there were two men on either side of the road. We were slow at that particular point, and they had in their hands bunches of fat pine. And each person was given a bunch of this fat pine, and a little farther along the way, there was a man who would light it. And it seems to me that the foreigners were put probably in the center of this array of sleighs, so that you could see the front of the line and the very back of it, and the serpentine way that it was going through the woods. It was a thrill. It was a sight that one will never forget. And when anybody speaks to me of Christmas, this picture comes in my mind right away.
Flying o'er the snow with a hey ha 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 ho ho ho, with sleigh bells ringing gaily, singing merrily
Darcy and Jimmy, do you have any idea what your voices sounded like back in 1967?
No, I can't remember.
Well, I'm about to let you hear them now. Darcy, you're first.
Something special to every person, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, Darcy.
Then what does Christmas mean to Miss Anderson?
Well, Christmas has meant to me the joy that we have known of being with each other, reinforced by the spirit that is Christmas. With a mother and two sisters and a nephew, the four of us who had been so long together. And having lost my mother about 3 years ago and a sister about a year and a half ago, Christmas is a little bit different to what it had been before. But we find that the love that we had for the other two that are gone is now heaped more highly upon those who still live. And so it is a getting together. It is a deeper understanding than we've ever known before that we want to share with each other. And I also think of Christmas as being a time when people might think of others who are not so fortunate as they. And I only would hope, too, that the spirit of Christmas could last a little longer in the hearts of men than maybe the day or two before or the week or two before and then a few days after the new year has passed. Because whatever makes you more warm and more understanding about a thing at Christmas time doesn't mean that you have licked it, so to speak, if you have been susceptible to it for 2 or 3 weeks. It will go on, unless one is dedicated toward doing something about it, because we are, after all, our brother's keeper.
Well, was it fun to go back through the years and hear some of the voices of people we've talked to before?
Yes. It was.
Then let's wish our listeners a Merry Christmas as we say goodnight. Dougie?
Merry Christmas.
Susan?
Merry Christmas.
Jimmy?
Best wishes, everybody.
Darcy?
And a very happy new year to all of you.
And now, on behalf of the Hartford Insurance Group, this is Dick Bertel wishing the very best of this holiday season to each and every one of you. From our house to your house.